You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome to the Repack. I'm Justice Mosqueda. I'm here with Evan Tex Western, or as one of our commenters on iTunes said, Justin and Ted. How you doing, Tex?
Oh my God. I needed a drink today. This is definitely a recap that needs some whiskey to get through it after that insanity of a fourth quarter in overtime. Good Lord.
Very, very stressful. Like my girlfriend like actively saw me get more stressed throughout the day. And at one point, like even asked me like, are you going to be okay? And I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, it's just too many missed field goals. Like that level of stress is just too much. I looked at that win probability chart that like ESPN has on like their box score, and it looks like someone's having a heart attack. It's no good. That was a lot. I don't even know where to be. I guess we got to talk about the kicking game.
Yeah,
really don't know what to say about the kicking game though. I mean, Mason Crosby missed a bunch of field goals, and they made the one at the end. You know, you listen to the post game presser. They said basically the same thing. I mean, they were talking about how they had all the confidence that Mason would make the last one. All they remember is the last one. LaFleur even talked about how on that last one really came down to like a confidence call. And he was like, yeah. Mason like had no hesitation. So I didn't have any hesitation, but if he would have flinched the second, then I would have sent the offense back there fourth and short. I would have kept the offense out there. So
yep.
I guess shouts to Mason for making the one that counted. The other ones would have counted too, but I guess this one counts too.
Yeah. Well, and to just see it was what, 5 out of 6 drives that end in a missed field goal between the two teams. And the sixth one was the pick on the first play of overtime. After the two in regulation, I don't understand why you wouldn't be a little more aggressive. Once you get that interception, you're already basically sitting down at like the 20-yard line. And LaFleur runs it 3 times basically for loss of 5 yards. I don't understand.
It twice? It was twice.
Maybe it was twice. And that's down. Right. No, you're right. It was 2 runs for a loss of 5. Then he kicks on third. And I just don't understand why after, seeing Crosby miss two field goals from very makeable distance, right at the end of regulation, why wouldn't you be more aggressive and try to go for the touchdown there? I struggle to understand that one a little bit. The fourth and inches, I guess I get when it comes to the, like you said, the confidence call. I was still kind of expecting them to try to, AJ Dillon out there and just have him plow into the line and pick up 2 yards. I still think that's probably what I would have done in that situation, but that's why I'm not a head coach in the NFL. So yeah, just the back and forth nature of that game. It's a really good thing we're recording this at like 9 Eastern, so we've had some time to come down off of that emotional roller coaster that was the last maybe 45 minutes or so of the game.
Yeah, I told you immediately. I was like, I'm gonna need like an hour just to be able to digest this, so I don't say something dumb. And you were like, no, we're not gonna record until tonight. And I was like, perfect, that works out. We should mention the score, 25-22. You have in here, dumbest score ever, question mark. Yeah, two of the games were 25-22. At one point, there were 2 games in the NFL at the same time that were tied 22-22. Just a very odd day for kickers in general around the league. But one thing that we should touch on, too, is not only that first drive that they had it, right, where they run it twice, you're losing yardage. You kick it on third down. But when they got the ball back, the way that they ended up in that hole to even kick that, they're running a bunch of play action shots, and the Bengals just weren't buying it because they're like, you need a score to win. We're not going to buy that you're running the ball at midfield. That's not what we're going to do right now. And then they kind of lucked out in terms of, just a great ball from Aaron Rodgers, a great catch by Randall Cobb. It was weird the way that the first down line was like superimposed on the field. It was a little shorter than it was in real life. So like, if you're watching the game, you think like, hey, Randall Cobb got that. He definitely got that. But it was like a yard or two short. So like, it actually ended up being an inches type of situation. So that was kind of like a weird thing to watch develop.
Yeah, too. I was cursing Fox on that one once we realized that the yellow line was a full yard back of where it should have been. Because, yeah, I'm sitting up jumping off my couch thinking that Cobb picked up the first down, and I'm confused as hell when I realize that that he ends up being a half a yard short and bringing up that tough decision for LaFleur. But the offense in the second half was crazy. They didn't punt at all after the first quarter. I was looking at the possession chart, and I mean, literally six straight drives for the Packers that end in a field goal attempt. Obviously the three misses, but then, you know, two makes in the other two drives in the second half, and then the winner at the end. Just some weird stuff with red zone offense, I feel like. That got a little screwy to me too.
Yeah, and one thing that we should note about the red zone, I mean, I guess the I Love Gold guys will probably touch this too, but AJ Dillon got his first touches inside the red zone this week. So that's something that's nice to see. It really does seem like that backfield in general, like they're figuring out like, hey, AJ Dillon, we want him to run between the tackles. Aaron Jones, we want him on the edge. And that's kind of how the offense operates. I mean, they gave the ball inside to Aaron Jones a couple times, and he wasn't able to kind of pop him the same way that AJ Dillon has. And it's just their skill set. I mean, it's nothing against Aaron Jones or anything. It's just like AJ Dillon. He's just a bowling ball, and it's tough to get that guy on the ground, especially consecutively. He's painful, right? I mean, it's the same thing you see with like Derrick Henry, where Derrick Henry in the first half, you know, he might not have great games. And then second half, it's just like, oh yeah, after 15 touches, if your defense doesn't have the lead. I mean, there was a clip of Jacksonville at the red zone, and like no one touched Derrick Henry, because it was just like, no, it's painful and we're down two scores, and I don't want to go through pain for Urban Meyer, right?
Yeah, like that's a business decision going out. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah, well, and Dillon today, I thought, did a really good job as a receiver out of the backfield too. A couple of those swing passes off to the left side, the touchdown, but they had a couple more of them, picking up where he left off with that one he had last week against Pittsburgh. Basically the same kind of check down from Rodgers and taking up the sideline. I thought a couple of like relatively moderate to high difficulty level catches, I thought too, on a couple of those. But it's nice to see that the book on him coming out with not really having much production as a receiver, and how much the Packers talked up his abilities that they had scouted from seeing him at the combine and go through drills and stuff, that they are putting him to use in that game. And the more you can use him that way, the more interchangeable I think those two running backs can be, because you can use either one of them in basically any situation if you have confidence in both of them in the passing game.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, last week they were talking about how Dillon is at the point now where Aaron Rodgers trusts him. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers talked about, he does that whole confirmation thing, breaking out the huddle, where like running back is the last dude he's talking to before like snap count starts. And he's just trying to make sure the running back's on the same page with him, basically. And he's like, he's got it every time, so I don't have to like do it anymore. And now they talked about after the game, Rodgers said, you know, he's not like a cold weather running back anymore. He's like just a complete running back. And it's like, oh, that's a nice thing to hear. Especially when, you know, you can end up in Rodgers' doghouse. Speaking of Rodgers' doghouse, DeGuara. Oh my goodness. Oh. There were two moments where Rodgers just ripped. I think he ripped into who was it? John Runyon Jr. In the red zone, because there was some sort of miscommunication. They couldn't get a playoff, and they ended up having, I think they had to burn a timeout. He was livid. And then there was that, it looked like an RPO or something like that. I think it was RPO. I don't think it was play action shot. And, DeGuara, he thought DeGuara was going to run an out, and it would have been wide open. And he ran a slant, and Rodgers just spikes it into the ground and then just like MFs him. It was tough. And then DeGuara came out of the game, and they got Tyler Davis, who like we had hardly ever seen. He was in the very next drive, and I was like, oh no, he's in the doghouse. DeGuara ended up coming back, but yeah, man, you can't be doing that consistently, or this dude's just going to hold it against you. Rodgers holds grudges, guys.
Yep. Yeah, I'm sure he's counting down the days before Dominique Daphne is eligible to come off of IR at this point. So get somebody back there at that fullback spot that he trusts a little bit.
Speaking about that offensive line, so Lucas Patrick started at center. Obviously, Josh Myers wasn't able to play with his finger injury. And then Elton Jenkins, you know, as it was trending positively, he still wasn't able to suit up for this game. So they basically trotted out the offensive line that they've usually been trotting out, plus Lucas Patrick. I thought Patrick did okay. He had that like weird snap that went ended up going straight to Aaron Jones.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I think he did okay. Nyman got beat a little bit. I think this is probably the worst the offensive line has played, but it wasn't like it was catastrophic by any means. I mean, Nyman lost a couple matchups. Rodgers, for the most part, was able to escape the pocket. I'm sure he took at least two sacks just remembering how that game went. But it wasn't anything crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Hendrickson had two sacks. I think that was it. Looking at now, it looks like Cincinnati had five hits on Rodgers in the scorebook. So not a really heavy day from in terms of Rodgers taking hits, but there did seem like there were a couple of plays in some kind of tough situations where the hits did affect throws that Rodgers had. There was one deep shot, I think, that I remember where he kind of got a late hit, you know, right as he was about to let go of the football and caused that to sail off the mark a little bit. But for the most part, yeah, I think they held up pretty well in the run game. You had a couple of, you know, of solid gains until obviously the big 50-yarder by Aaron Jones that kind of broke it open. And let's give a shout out to him for throwing a cornerback soul into the sun at the end of that run. I don't remember who that was. If that was that Mike Hilton or somebody, but just that stiff arm at the end of that run was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And those corners I thought were playing very well. I mean, yeah. Rodgers a couple of times, the first two drives was really Rodgers figuring out how the game was going to be officiated for the most part. Like he was throwing a lot of those, like, I hope I get a DPI call here balls. But I mean, Hilton was playing well. Trey Waynes, I thought, played solid. Uwuzie was great, I thought, until he got banged up.
Yep.
Defensively, so Barnes returned. I thought that the way that they deployed him was very interesting because we are now in the post Ty Summers defense era, because the way that they ended up using him was Barnes was their base inside linebacker next to Campbell. And then they would use Burks and Nickel almost exclusively. So Summers didn't get a lot of reps. I'd be interested in seeing, you know, tomorrow when we get the snap counts up for the site, how many reps he actually got on the defensive side of the ball. But, you know, Campbell just keeps making plays, man. I really am going to be a huge fan of him. I was banging the drum for Pro Bowl for him and Bo Horquez. I think Bo Horquez only got one punt today and it wasn't a very good one. It ended up going like 30 something yards, right?
I think
not what you want to see.
No, yeah, he had two. He had the short one that actually pinned him deep on I think the first drive, and that was fine. But then that shank on his second attempt. That one felt very J.K. Scott like and was the first time we had seen that since he showed up. So that was a little disappointing, but thankfully it didn't have to get him a whole lot of work in the second half since they were at least moving the ball consistently. They just couldn't find the way into the end zone after halftime.
In the secondary, so obviously Jair is going to go to IR. That is kind of good news. I mean, he was going to go on IR no matter what, right? Yeah. So that was going to happen. The good news is, you know, they're going to test his shoulder, see how it heals. It really does seem like it's something that, like, we're not even really going to know until, like, 2 weeks from now. Yeah. Hopefully, you know, it starts healing up right and he can come back and play some playoff games for him. You know, King didn't have as bad of a game as King usually does, which was nice to see. They were moving him and Stokes around. Like, you know, usually they just sit down one guy at left corner, one guy at right corner and just kind of play ball. They were moving them both around. Chandon Sullivan was in the slot. The one thing that did kill him was when they got Shamar John Charles in there at the red zone for some reason as an outside corner. And I'm like, okay, one, why are you putting this guy in that situation where he's a red zone only guy? That doesn't really make sense to me because he's a smaller type of guy too. And then he doesn't play outside. He's almost exclusively played inside, even in the preseason. Like he's Chandon's backup, essentially, is what his role on the team is. And then he was playing Twister on the edge. The running back got past him and ended up scoring a touchdown. That was one of the toughest things, too, I think, was just their running game. I mean, Cincinnati was able to, like, hashtag establish it enough where, you know, the pain started stacking up, right? They had three guys who were able to run it, and it was just bad tackling day. And for the most part, we've had a good tackling defense, but it kind of reverted to the defenses of the past in the ground game.
Yeah, that was a little rough. And your point about Shamar, why you've got your smallest cornerback in on the boundary in the red zone. I mean, that would seem like the ideal spot to have like Yadam in there. Bigger corner, more physical guy who generally is a solid tackler. That one surprised the heck out of me. So I'll be interested too, as far as Campbell and the inside linebackers go, because Campbell did get banged up a little bit early in the game. Missed a handful of plays. They had to have Barnes put the communications helmet on for a little bit. So he kind of played more of the full-time inside linebacker role for at least a little bit, but I still didn't see Summers come in at all when that was the case. I think they rolled with Barnes and Burks as the two guys, even in base when Campbell was out for a little bit. But him being back, early in the second half, I think he only missed maybe a drive or two. You just see the difference on that defense when he's in there. It just, he's shooting gaps. He's running to the sideline. And then, you know, coming up with that big pick, which that's entirely, I think, on Burrow. I think clearly there looked like there was a miscommunication there between him and his receiver, but at the same time, even if the receiver makes the right read or, runs the right route, it looks like Campbell's going to be picking that off regardless. So he just keeps making splash plays, man. And you can't possibly get more value out of a $2 million contract than what the Packers have gotten out of him so far this year.
Yeah, Rodgers even praised him. He was like, I can't believe that guy was on the street. Yeah. I think that was like word for word what Rodgers said after the game. One interesting thing to put on your guys' radar is, so that deep shot to Jamar Chase, right, down the right sideline on that like scramble drill. The way that it was explained by LaFleur made it sound like what Cincinnati did, Cincinnati made a check, right? The words for that check were also a check that the Packers defense has. And that check made it so that the pass rush turned into a mush rush. So they weren't trying to pin their ears and like actually go after the quarterback. It's like more that they're like playing contain. So the defense heard a check from Joe Burrow, thought that it came from their defense, decided not to attack the quarterback, and then that's what gave him time for basically that scramble drill shot down the right sideline. And I was like, that's interesting, because I've heard the whole, like, you know, sometimes words sound the same and players get on the wrong play call and you're like, oh, we can't have words that rhyme, right?
Yep.
I've never heard the offense called something and we thought it was a defensive check. That's a new one for me.
That is fascinating. I missed that in the post game. So that at least explains, you know, why that play turned out a little bit the way it did, but yeah, that's bizarre. And it's interesting too, with kind of LaFleur and Zach Taylor sort of both coming out of that Shanahan McVay system. It's just kind of crazy that they would come up with the same terminology for something on opposite sides of the football. I'll be curious to see, did he say what the actual verbiage was that for that check? I'm sure he didn't, but I'd be curious it'd be fascinating to find out what that was.
Yeah, I know. Just from like coaching high school ball, right? Like the biggest thing is colors, right? So like most high school kids, right? Most of the high school athletes in the U.S., like, you're playing both sides of the ball just because the rosters aren't as big. The problem when you get like new defensive guys and new offensive guys on the same staff is like making sure words don't double up. So like every defensive coordinator wants to call like cover two blue or something like that. And then you'll have a pass protection that's like blue. And then it's like the kids' brains get mixed up because both of them have colors and you have to like sit down and basically like break the tie. And you're like, all right, who gets to use colors in their play call, you know, something like that. So I wonder if they have the same type of check on the offensive side and, you know, they're splitting defenses so they don't like really know. All right, so we'll throw it to break right now, and then we'll get into the vibe checks.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It's always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
And we're back. All right, let's start with the offense. Vibe check. Give me yours first.
I'm sitting at a 7. Again, the red zone offense is really the only thing that I'm particularly concerned about, especially when, you know, when and if Jenkins and Myers come back. Adams had a career high in receiving yardage. He was over 200 for the first time in his career. I saw a stat that this is the first game in Packers history where they had a 300-yard passer, a 200-yard receiver, and a 100-yard rusher. First time in franchise history. So,
and they only scored 25 points.
Right. So moving the ball was not the issue whatsoever. But, gosh, they've got to figure out that red zone offense because it was so good last year. And again, they'll talk about it more, I'm sure, in detail on I Love Gold tomorrow. But it was frustrating to see them getting into the you know, inside the 20-yard line and just coming away with three, or you know, or when Crosby kind of turned into Shankopotamus, coming away with nothing.
One of the interesting things to me is like the Tonyan stuff. Like he's just not producing the way that I think we kind of expected, and some of that is a rotation thing. I think there's just so many tight ends who have been able to kind of get it. Like Daphne wasn't Daphne for the whole season, right? Like DeGuara was banged up last year. So like, I wonder how much it is. Like, there's just so many mouths to feed that like, you know, we don't have to call the Robert Tonyan plays right now. But it really did seem like last week, like their answer to all this, like, okay, you double Devontae, MVS isn't on the field, we're going to take our shots at Robert Tonyan. We didn't really see that this week, I don't think.
No, I think he had maybe two targets. I only remember one catch. There was a nice one up along the sideline to convert, I think, a third down. But yeah, he really seems like an afterthought in this offense, just in general. And the one or two games where he has had, you know, a couple of targets, I mean, he's dropped a ball or two, and he just has not been, you know, has not been bringing in those targets at the rate that he did last year. And I think we all expected some level of regression from him, right? An 88% catch rate is not sustainable. His touchdown rate last year was not sustainable, but that might be, I feel like his lack of touchdowns is also, maybe there's something correlating there between the Packers' lack of red zone success, because he did so much of his work down close to the goal line last year. And for some reason, it's just not working this year.
Yeah. Randall Cobb, I mean, what a guy. I mean, Mr. Third Down, he did it again. I mean, we're seeing it back-to-back games. I think there was a point where it was like the Packers converted four third downs and all four of them were to Randall Cobb, you know, to start the game. So, I mean, that's good, right? General manager, yeah. Aaron Rodgers, another notch for his scoreboard.
Yep. Well, and converting that, well, again, almost converting the big one to set up that the game-winning field goal, that felt like a huge play because, I mean, it obviously
if it nothing was else, to get it them put them in field goal range.
Yeah. Exactly, right. Yeah, to at least get the 10 yards or so that they needed to get into a place where you could even consider putting Crosby out there. It was just a massive play. And it was a tremendous catch, too, because based on placement, I mean, that felt like a hospital ball. It didn't end up being that big a hit, I don't think. At least it just kind of the positioning of where he was and where the safety was didn't make for that big of a collision. But it looked like it was going to be a really, really big hit coming. And once again, Rodgers trusting Cobb to haul in contested catches like that over the middle. And yeah, hats off to Randall for coming through again in the clutch.
One thing we haven't talked about, that I think it was the opening drive. I don't think it was the second drive, but the opening drive, there was definitely a tripping call and it didn't get called for whatever reason. They ended up actually getting a tripping call. It was a interior defensive lineman later in the game, but it was like the least offensive of the like four potential tripping calls over the last like two games.
Yeah. Yeah, by far. They called the wrong one if they're going to call one of them. I think you tweeted out the screenshot of the first one that went uncalled. And
it's full leg out. Like, no one is around him.
Full
like,
extension.
Billy Turner is just, like, standing up watching him because the guy's already on the ground. And it's, just full extension. You couldn't be more blatant. I don't understand
why. Well, and it was in a wide-open area, too. That's the thing that gets me about that call is there's – you know, it's him, it's the ball carrier, and it's his blocker, and not really anybody else around. The one that they called was in the middle of a pile on an inside run to Dylan, I think.
Yep.
And how they decided to flag that one instead of that one on that first drive, I don't understand what the hell's going on here. I did have to say, I had a friend watching the second half with me, and he was asking, like, is there some sort of weird emphasis on tripping this year, or are guys just doing it and we're noticing it, or is it just weird random noise that it just kind of is happening a lot? And I think it's probably the latter, right? Like, it's just weird that we've had a couple of these plays that have come up, but I don't think there's anything in particular going on out there, right?
Yeah, I'm just like, yeah, that's a good point, because I'm like hyper focused on it, and you know, once your brain starts, you start connecting those loops, mm-hmm. right? You can't get it out of your damn head. Shamar John Charles on that one on the edge, he actually ends up sticking his leg out too. And it looks like he was just so far away from the play, he couldn't even trip the guy, but he was actively trying to trip him. So that was another one that showed up. And I was like, what is it with, like, can the NFL guys like not tackle anymore? Is this like the, we can't practice and this is what ends up happening type of thing? But I don't know. I'm going to give the offense, you said 7 out of 10, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to be right there with you. The red zone issues, we just got to fix it. We got to fix that. You know, things are going to trend upward, right? Like, MVS is going to get healthy. The offensive line is going to get better. Not that it's even – I wouldn't even classify it as bad right now. Billy Turner, shouts to him. He's been able to hold down the fort at right tackle, and he wasn't necessarily that guy when he showed up in Green Bay. He's gotten better. Very comfortable with him there. I would have thought – you know, a couple of years ago, I would have said, just put him at guard because I don't even trust him outside. And now he's like the dude you can hang your hat on. That's impressive. Moving to the defense, vibe check. Where are you at? Jamar Chase is a tough thing because it's like, this dude is just good. Like, he has arrived in the NFL. He is as good as everyone said that he was. He took a year off from football entirely. Did not matter. He is still that guy. He is great at what he does. He's going to be here for like 12 years playing professional football, and I'm happy the Packers are only going to play him like once every 4 years.
Absolutely. Yeah, putting a number on it. I'm like a hard six and a half right now. And a lot of that again is just still trying to figure out what they're going to do in the secondary. I don't know that we really felt like we've got any answers today as to how the secondary is going to play moving forward, at least the cornerback unit. Because to your point, Chase looks like he's such a dominant player. There really weren't any other receivers for Cincinnati who had a big game or really made a major impact on the game. So that's great. But you saw Stokes give up some big catches and make some good plays in the ball. So you take a little good with the bad there. And I think Barnes being back was big. I felt pretty good about that. But pass rush was okay, I think. I don't think there was...
It was real up and down. I mean,
yeah.
Kingsley, again, you know, had a couple splash plays. Dean, I thought, had a pretty solid game, probably his second mm-hmm. best game of the season. Yep. Obviously he didn't have Brunskill to take advantage of, but what's his name, Jackson Carmen, was pretty close to that, their right guard, so he was able to take advantage of that. I guess that's like the Dean Lowry thing, right? It's like, if you have a inexperienced or guy who can't handle power moves at right guard, Dean Lowry's just gonna have a better game than he usually does. Yeah. If you have a guy who can handle it, then he's gonna be like zeroed on the box score. But yeah, I mean, the defensive line, I thought, did okay. I know Kenny had like two TFLs, which is nice to see. The thing that really killed me was their run game. It wasn't even necessarily their pass game. Like, Stokes is a young guy. He's keeping coverage tight. It's not like coverage bust. It's just like that last, 5% of the route, he's just not there, and it ends up being a completion. The run game, where it's just like they can just hand it off and just move the ball down the field. It's like, we can't let this happen. You can't let this happen in the NFL. So I'm more concerned about the run game right now than the passing game. But to your point, I mean, they didn't really have other options other than Ja'Marr Chase deep. And then Joe Burrow a couple times. I mean, it seemed like after he completed that one, he got it in his head like, oh, I can throw the deep ball. And the Packers were like, no, you actually cannot, because your arm strength can't make those type of plays right now. So maybe against Justin Fields next week, that changes a little bit. But I guess that's something that we're going to have to, take game by game. Yadam actually did get in for a bit, because I know King, when he got hurdled or messed up his shoulder, so he was on the bench for a while. Yadam came off the bench, which again is another point to like, why was Shamar John Charles on the field in the red zone when Isaac Yadam is your what, I guess that's corner four outside. Yeah, that still doesn't make sense to me. But the run game is the bigger thing to me more than the passing game at this point, I think, even though, Chase ate him up.
Yeah. Well, and I wonder if there were some – I mean, there clearly were some halftime adjustments by the Bengals, because they had the – in the first half, they went three and out five times. Four times. Four of their first five drives were three and outs. And then you have a long 10-yard touchdown drive in the first quarter, and then the big bomb to Chase that – I actually think that, knowing that there was that check issue with the terminology thing, that makes me feel a little better about that whole thing, because that's just a freak incident.
But then, again, I've never heard that once in my life.
That's ludicrous. But it did seem like they, that first drive coming out of the half, they got the pick from Amos, which was great. But then it did seem like the Bengals got something going, and maybe there was some adjustment in the run game but they were definitely able to sustain that a little bit, with the game staying close. And that was definitely an issue. So we'll be interested to see next week. No David Montgomery for the Bears, which I'm A-okay with that. So hopefully that'll help this run defense get back on track a little bit.
Yeah. I'm going to go 6 out of 10, just thinking about all this stuff. There's just so many injuries and question marks and just weird things. They basically haven't played like a competitive, I think, like playoff caliber NFL team the last 2 weeks. So that also adds into the question marks, because, we think we have answers, but we might not have answers. It's that whole thing where it's like, sometimes you don't even know the questions that are actually going to arise. Special teams, goodness gracious. So we already touched Bohorquez, two punts, one good one, one bad one. Mason Crosby, obviously, just real tough day at the office. Let's just move forward with that one, I guess, is like the approach. Like, what are you going to say? Hey, I wish you would have made him. I think he wish he would have made him too. So
yeah. Yeah.
What are we going to do with that?
But again, he went out there, he had no hesitation, and he went out and drilled a 49 yarder to win it. So, I mean, props to him for shaking it off. I almost feel like that was one of those where you wanted to get him the winner to get that out of his head right away, and not have a repeat of like that Lions game from a couple of years ago, where, you know, it was something that was going to be talked about all week long. If he, you know, if they had scored a touchdown to win it instead, or if they had ended up losing the game, I was happy for Mason that he was the one to win it. So that was at least a little bit of saving grace for him, thankfully.
Yeah. And then the return game, coverage wise, still not great. You know, they bursted one where it looked like they had a guy dead in the water, and then he ends up getting like 20 yards after that. And you're like, what, how the hell did that even happen? It's just guys not getting off of blocks. Kick return wise, I don't think there was anything to write home about, but every time Amari is back there on punt return, I am freaking out. Like, this is not what we signed up for. Like, he was a third round pick, and he was supposed to be return man, like gadget play type of guy, like just get the ball in his hand. And now he's back there on punt return, and he's going east and west so much that I'm like, just catch it, or like get away from the ball, like fair catch it, something. Like, it's just bad results consistently. It makes me anxious.
And I know we harp on it all the time, but what are you doing using a 46 man spot on him? You give him three or four plays of jet motion on offense. You give him two or three punt returns a game. Hell, Kylan Hill actually got in on offense and got a catch.
Second play of the game. Play of the game.
So what, again, you're telling me that active roster spot wouldn't be better used on a 300-pound guy like Jack Heflin for the middle of the defense? No, I'm sorry. I'm gonna keep harping on it until they make a change here. Until Amari shows something worthy of making him active on game day.
Speaking of actives on game days, not to trample over the special teams talk, but Equanimee St. Brown, this is his last activation before they have to make a decision on him coming off the practice squad or not, right? And I don't think he's made a play in the three games that he's been activated. I mean, no, I'm not sure what the deal is there, where they're trying to move him up and stuff, but
I mean, the three plays that he's made were, he had a bad penalty on special teams last week, he had a drop last week, and then he had a blown block on a receiver screen in today's game. I have been an EQ fan since they drafted him, and I have been holding out hope that he ends up turning into something and being a useful NFL player. But I think I am officially, I'm not going to give up the ghost just yet, but I'm real close. I'm almost there. So I need to see something the next time he's active. And it's probably going to be next week, because MBS is still out one more game on IR. So I think they still got an open roster spot, so they could promote him if they needed to keep him active. But yeah, he has not shown anything worthy of getting an active roster spot in the couple games he's played the last couple weeks.
Yeah, it's been tough. And then Ben Braden got activated too from the practice squad. Maybe he was out there on like PAT team. I wasn't paying attention, but that's probably where he got his reps. The right side of the line for the field goal unit, still not looking great. I mean, some of the things that are happening are just very confusing, where, you know, they're letting free runners come, not free runners, but they're turning guys loose on the right side, on the interior. And it's just like, I don't know how this happened. I know the special teams coach for San Jose State, he actually helped me. I coached special teams last year at the high school I coached at. He used to work with the Raiders and stuff. I got put through with one of my coaching buddies to him, and he gave me a bunch of resources. So I might go through his old Raiders playbooks and just see like how the NFL does it. But my assumption is that like, field goal team, for the most part, even at the NFL level, is still a lot of step down stuff, which is like no pressure on the inside. If you need to turn a guy loose, it's on the outside, because it's the widest angle to block these kicks. And you're still seeing guys turn loose on the inside. And I'm like, okay, what the hell is happening here? Cause this is three straight weeks of it now, right? That's bad. You can like Drayton. Drayton seems like a great guy. He seems like a guy everyone loves in the locker room. They got to get the field goal team fixed. They got to get it fixed.
You can't keep repeating the same mistakes over and over again. It is going to cost them a game one of these days if this keeps up. And I can't help wondering if maybe some of that played into Crosby's mind a little bit, seeing these guys come off the right side, because all of his misses went to the left. So it wouldn't surprise me if that was maybe just even subconsciously affecting him just a little bit, and pushing a few of those kicks that way.
Mason didn't sell anyone out in the presser. I listened to it. They had who was it? They had Mason talk. They had Devontae talk. They had Rodgers talk, and they had LaFleur talk. For the most part, they kind of stayed away from the kicking issues, but Rodgers actually dipped into it and said, you know, we got to be more consistent and we got to give him the laces. And I was like, I wonder if
that sounds like a Hunter Bradley problem.
Yeah. Is that a long snapper, like holder type of like that type mm-hmm. of the, that part of the operation? I didn't notice that live, but
no, I didn't either, but
I'll watch, you know, on the rewatch, either later tonight or later.
Most of the misses looked like he hit him clean, but I think one of them might've been it was either the PAT or it was the first miss before the 2 minute warning. One of those looked like he caught it funny and had a weird rotation on it. So maybe that's that would be one that I'd be interested to look back on and see if there was something funny with the ball placement.
Yeah. Yeah. If we could just like pressure wash today's special teams performance outside of my brain, I'd feel a lot more comfortable about this team.
Agreed.
Special teams vibes, I'm going to give it like a let's go like 3 out of 10. It was bad. We don't have to pretend it wasn't bad. It wasn't a full-blown collapse. It wasn't, you know, kick returns being returned for touchdowns the moment you get the go-ahead score or anything like that. But the field goal unit and some of those kicks were tough too. You know, Mason was talking about how, you know, the 51 yarder, really that one was just like the wind took it. He just misestimated the wind and it just took it away. He was able to hit the big one, you know, like you mentioned, the fact that he was able to win it kind of galvanizes him again, right? Where it's like, hey, we reinstilled confidence in Mason Crosby. And now he's the reason why we win, not the reason why we lose. So I guess that's a good thing, but I feel like 3 out of 10 is still fair.
Yeah, I agree. That's kind of where I'm falling too. I'm hopeful that Bohorquez can bounce back a little bit from that rough punt. I mean, every other kick he's had this year has been great. So until it becomes a recurring issue like it was with J.K. Scott, I'll continue to feel pretty confident in him kicking away. I feel much better coming off of a converted game winner at the end. And again, that was no easy kick. I mean, that was a 49 yarder to finish it off, and he drilled that one straight down the middle. So that one certainly, you know, at least leaves you a good taste in your mouth at the end of the game. But again, the protection issues, the coverage issues, those are still continuous ongoing things that have to get fixed. So I can't go any higher than the 3 either.
Yeah, I think that's probably the weakness of the team right now. I mean, between that and then, you know, defensive run game, and then the offense just kind of figuring to go back to the offense. I just want to touch this again. They are just coming out of like 3 games in a row, where teams said, just take the check down, run the ball on us until you get a lead, and then we're going to have to start playing you different. And for whatever reason, the Packers came out and they decided, like, let's try to see if we can score a touchdown in 2 plays. Mm-hmm. And they did that for 2 drives, and they basically ended up punting those first 2 drives. And it's like, no, guys, you're probably going to have to do this. Like, every single game of the season, teams are going to play you this way, and you can't cheat it. And you especially can't cheat it when MVS is out and, you know, you have three backups in on the offensive line. You're not going to be able to cheat it, guys. Like, you're going to have to hashtag establish it. You're going to have to take the checkdowns. You're not going to be able to get them all in big chunk plays, at least early on in the game. That's just not how teams are going to play you. And I think that was one of the more frustrating things about this game offensively. That was just kind of weird to see, where it was like, they were really testing deep and just like seeing what they would throw DPIs and stuff on. Cause it's not like their wide receivers were separating. Nothing against the guys that the Packers got. It's just the Bengals cornerbacks were playing them real well and real tight.
Yeah. Yeah, the one other thing that I would note too is, you know, when the Packers took over with 20 seconds left after Cincinnati's kicker missed his first field goal, his first game winning attempt, you know where the ball's going. You know that he's going to try to throw a one chunk play to Devontae and, you know, pick up enough yards to get him into field goal range. But somehow Devontae is wide open in the middle of the field again. Like, it blows my mind how Adams can get that wide open in situations where, you know, he is the target and he is going to get the ball. I just don't understand how that keeps happening. I'm not going to complain, but it's mind-boggling.
It has to be that, like, they're really scared of you getting that extra play, right? Where yeah. They just essentially concede, hey, you can throw one ball down the middle of the field and then you have to clock it, and then your offense is off the field. And what they don't want to do, because, like, I also saw they had like four dudes on that sideline that Devontae came off of, just lined up straight on the sideline. Gotcha. Like post snap. So it ended up being, yeah, I mean, that was their plan. It was basically, don't let him catch this ball and then go out of bounds, because then Rodgers might have another shot at that. And yeah. I guess later, you know, the deeper you go into the field, you can't really play those type of coverages. So I kind of get it. I just, yeah, I mean, if you were on the opposite, if we were Bengals fans, we would be harping about that. And we'd be like, yep. Why do you even give him the shot? You know, you still have to play defense for one play before you can even go into that type of mindset.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, that's tough. Anything else to add, Tex?
No, I mean, that pretty much covers it. I'm going to have a little drink and, try to get a good night's sleep now that, we at least got a W and moved to 4-1, but man, that was an ugly one. We'll take it.
There's no style points, but style points are, it would help us sleep easier at night. Nothing else. Sure. All right. Take care, Tex.
Have a good night. Go Pack, go.